Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know that elders and others are losing their rights to liberty and property? Anyone can petition a court to have a person deemed incapacitated. What if that person is you? The adult guardianship system was created to protect incompetent people and their assets. A court-appointed guardian, sometimes a total stranger, can force you into a nursing home and sell your home to pay for services. Treasured belongings can disappear as you are drugged and isolated from loved ones. Why does this happen? Unfortunately, the courts don't have the funding to supervise and audit cases. A guardian makes all decisions on your behalf, taking control of your assets with little accountability. The potential for abuse is frightening. Luckily, not all guardians exploit those under their care, but when they do, there's really nowhere to go for help. The National Association to Stop Guardian Abuse, NASGA, is working to reform adult guardianship to return it to its once noble purpose of protecting the human rights to life, liberty, and property and ending financial exploitation of assets. Are you or your loved ones protected? To learn more, visit stopguardianabuse.org.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online. This is TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is In the Mix. My co-host is Kaz Witten-Scaife. How you doing, Kaz?
I'm good. I'm broadcasting here from Rosie's Coffee Bar and Bakery, so let everyone know I'll be kind of in and out as we have so many orders for Mother's Day, so what a blessing, and I'm excited to be here, and I can't wait for you to do my talk about what happened today. Oh, my gosh. Okay, go on. I'm excited to be here. Okay.
Oh, wow, great. Our guest tonight is Joanne Bogalis, and Joanne is in Greece with her mother, where she fled to escape the guardian. And Joanne, I want to welcome you to the show, but then I would like you, for people who might be new to this story, to give us some background on it. What happened? How did all this come to be?
Okay. Thanks for having me on your show, Marty.
You bet.
Just real short and sweet, my father died in 2010, and then there was some family infighting. Some family was trying to get some assets that didn't belong to them, that belonged to my mother. There was back and forth fighting. And eventually, because of the family infighting, the court appointed a private guardian over my mother without any medical testing or anything. So it was, in my opinion, and if you look at all the papers, it's a fraudulent guardianship. And then what happened after that, which is very typical in guardianships. Within 43 days, my mother was institutionalized without any medical testing, you know, and so she spent almost a year and a half locked up in isolation, and her health was deteriorating significantly, and everything that was happening was so unrealistic. You know, you couldn't believe the things that were happening in this guardianship. And what I've learned is it's very typical of the things that happen. So they basically isolated my mom. They were drugging her with highly inappropriate drugs, drugs that the combination together would just cause her to become unconscious. And that happened because she was complaining, as any person would complain that was locked up against their will, and they wanted her to stop complaining. And so the day we left was the day that the guardian made it quite clear to me and that my mother would never leave the facility again, not even for an outing. She would be locked in this 12-by-12 room for the remainder of her life. Now, mind you, my mother still had her cognitive abilities, many of her cognitive abilities. She had slight memory loss, but she had been diagnosed as severe dementia. And I was also told by the guardian that I could never see my mother again. So that was the day we left with just the clothes on our back. And decided that it's just better to have our freedom and leave everything behind. So that's what we did. And that was in 2016. And we've been here since 2016. And we've tried many things to find justice. But all the doors are closed. And
yes.
I'm sure you can explain that, especially with what's happening now, how the doors not only are closed, but every time they bring out legislation, the closed doors are slammed in our face again, basically.
Yes.
With
yes.
just blatant injustice.
One of the ways, Joanne, that this guardian got away with what he's doing was he continued to file into the court and has to this day filed into the court that your mother is missing, whereabouts unknown, but at the same time, he's still accessing the estate for fees and services. I don't know what those could be for someone you claim you don't know where they are. And at one point, wasn't he taking even her Social Security?
Yes, he had her Social Security. In fact, we left in 2016. I supported her on my retirement for 2 years. She didn't get her Social Security until we went through the American Embassy, and it started coming in 2018, I believe it was the first time, and then the guardian took some steps and stopped it. Based on steps that they took previously, putting a warrant out for my arrest for saving my mother from them. Basically, I couldn't be her representative payee, so he used that to stop her payments. Instead of looking out for his ward, at least she had her Social Security, he cut that. And it's all about retaliation. This whole system is about retaliation against family members that, you know, try to help their loved one. And then in 2019, now she finally started receiving her Social Security check. Finally.
Okay, what did they do? What did they do with the money he had collected fraudulently?
When my mom did get her Social Security, he kept $7,000 of her Social Security. He was supposed to. He got notified by Social Security that the payments were going to start coming to her, and he had the right to save some of her Social Security, supposedly for paying for his ward's expenses, even though her income is well over, $100,000, she makes $500,000 a year, so he needed her $7,000 to keep from his ward. But that didn't answer your question. What was your question? Because I got a little off track.
That's all right. I was just saying you eventually got it where... didn't they notify him he had to pay back what he had collected?
Of course, they did.
Yeah.
So he knows where my mother is. He knows where his ward is, and he's made no effort to help her. And all the rest of her estate goes apparently to him. He's making quite an income every year with his ward living off of barely anything. He's keeping all of her retirement checks. She had two jobs. She had annuities she was collecting from. He's keeping all of that.
And he's still reporting to the court fraudulently that she's missing, whereabouts unknown.
Yes, and can I tell you how we know that for sure now?
Yes.
On January 30th of this year, my mom has an attorney here in Greece, and she served the guardian with an affidavit of notice stating that his award is alive and well, and that she's living in Greece, and that's her choice. And so that was January 30th. The court was served with the same paper on February 6th of this year.
So the
guardian and the court were notified that my mother was alive and well and healthy and needed support. On March 18th of this year, the guardian submitted his annual well-being report, and her whereabouts to the guardian are still unknown. There's no change from one well-being report to the other. Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
That's
blatant power.
Yes, Joanne, what I've seen in many cases, after they file the first one, if they're forced to file again, if they've got a judge that said, well, you have to file this, which they're supposed to do, but if they're not coerced into doing it, most of them don't. And that's for a particular reason. If you don't file it, nobody can nail you for fraud in these reports because there's nothing on file. You didn't file anything. This is why they do that. So if he's forced to file it, here he is presenting this even after the court has been informed, Social Security has informed him, everybody involved has been informed, including him, of where she is, including the embassy there in Greece, and this man files another fraudulent form into the court, missing, whereabouts unknown. Now,
yes, because the notice that we sent in was signed, was notarized at the American Embassy. So it's a valid form stating that she's alive and well, right?
Yes.
What does your attorney in Greece think of all this? This is crazy.
Exactly. That's what she said. This is crazy. And in Greece, this is just an unthinkable thing that somebody, an outsider, that the court would even allow an outsider to come and take over. Instead of a family member. But you can't get guardianship in Greece like you can there. And guardianship in Greece is very difficult to get, as it should be everywhere. You have to have substantial proof, and somebody has to have no family to take care of them, and basically be institutionalized and then get guardianized. You can't just say, I have a concern for this person. I need an emergency guardianship because I think they didn't pay their bill, and I'm their neighbor.
Right.
You can't do that here. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You know, and that's another thing they rely on, too, I have found, is they'll say, they can't manage their money. They can't. Well, look at their credit rating and see what that says. Because that's one of the best defenses. Because that tells how you pay your bills, whether you're on time, you're late, whatever it is. So in many cases, these people's bills go out automatically. They don't physically pay their bills. They are paid automatically through their checking account or, some other setup with their bank. And so to stand up in court and say that, but see, the problem is, and we've brought this out so many times, that potential guardian can stand up there and levy all kinds of charges that have no basis in fact. They never produce any evidence whatsoever to support those charges, and they are never asked for any. And you, as the family, are not allowed to present anything to refute what they have said. The probate examiner will not allow it to be entered into the record, so that when you get a transcript, if you can get a transcript, it reads that no one objected. No one said anything. Nobody countered. And this is a falsehood, but so many of these courts now won't even provide you with a transcript. And if they are forced to give you a recording, it will be for many hundreds of dollars. We've seen them as little as $300 and as much as $1,500 to get a recording, and it will be edited and things will be taken out of it. Like when we have these hearing examiners tell people, if you mention the Constitution one more time, I'm going to hold you in contempt and put you in jail. That's because you are not in a constitutional court and you are not operating under the law. You're not operating under common law. You are subject to statute, which has been artificially erected to do exactly what it's doing, violate your rights, steal your identity, and steal your estate. And so we have, to me, this is racketeering, plain and simple. And you say, we've told this many times, it's the same judge with the same attorneys, the same guardians, the same APS agents, and they run people through these same tribunals like a mill. And this is trafficking. I don't care how you slice and dice it, it is trafficking. Human trafficking is not always about sex, although some of these people have been sexually exploited also. Trafficking is the buying and selling of human beings for profit. Sex is only one aspect of it. In this case, with the elderly, it is the theft of that estate. That's what they're wanting access to, and everybody is getting a piece of the pie, except the targeted victim who gets, their property is taken, their identity, and I can't stress this enough. When that guardianship is established, the person they targeted has suffered a civil death. They no longer exist in the law. And so this makes it impossible, virtually, in most cases, to get out of probate and get into a court of law, because according to probate, with this civil death, you don't exist. And the guardian who has assumed your identity now presents themselves as you. and they access all of your property. They sell your property. They take your personal possessions. This is legalized theft. I don't care how you look at it. With the isolation thing, was there anything given, anything at all, Joanne, any reason why your mother had to be put in a nursing home?
Yeah, because they said that she was a threat to herself and others. Because she was locked inside of her home with 24-hour health care. Now, mind you, my mother and I were living a wonderful life in Arizona together because we escaped the first time with my brothers that did actually take over her trust. We escaped to Arizona because they were isolating her and she wasn't happy. We left for Arizona and then we ended up back in Minnesota. What was your question? Because I got sidetracked. It's 3:00 in the morning here, guys. Be nice to me. be patient.
Joanne.
What was your question again?
I don't know. I was just wondering what the excuse was for putting her into a nursing home.
That's right. So we were living this wonderful life in Arizona. We come back to Minnesota to sign. My mom wanted to sign a mediation agreement. Not wanted to, but all the lawyers all planned this out, right? And you kind of go along with what they're saying because they're supposed to be the experts. She goes and signs a mediation agreement, giving her sons, the two sons that stole from her, a lot of what they stole already, just forgiving it, so she could have peace of mind and to walk away. Instead, they immediately took her, isolated her again, and 4 months later, she goes from mild cognitive impairment to severe dementia. So she's locked inside of her home for 4 months as they're planning this guardianship to happen.
Okay.
So in those 4 months, here's this normal woman. She was, I think, 72 at the time, if I remember right. 74. And she was living a normal life. She was normal for her age. And all of a sudden, she's locked inside of her home. She wasn't on any drugs when she was with me, based on doctor's opinions. All of a sudden, she's on Ativan and other kind of drugs, Yeah, because she's locked up, right? And so now they want to confine her and make her happy in that little confinement. Well, my mom often didn't take the drug because she doesn't like to take drugs, and she didn't need those drugs. So what happened is she tried to get out of her house. She was, smart, and she left. And instead of realizing that the woman is trying to leave her home to find help, she was actually trying to get to my house to look for me. They said she was confused, and so now, therefore, she's severely demented, and, they kept adding to her diagnosis, and really, it was just a normal person being locked up against their will and traumatized and trying to get out, and so we're putting all these new labels that are convenient for the guardianship on my mother, and so then once she was guardianized, after 43 days, the guardian set up this scenario that made my mom look like she was violent, which she's not violent at all. She doesn't even have that kind of mentality. So that she was so violent that she was a threat to herself and everyone else. Well, what happened is they put her in the hospital that night and they put her in a temporary facility. And she was there for about a week. And then the guardian decided against the court order that she was going to be institutionalized. Because the court order said she couldn't be institutionalized unless the family agreed. Well, we didn't agree, but we lost all choice anyway, because once the guardian is involved, or God, let me just say, he's just like God. That's how he's treated. She was institutionalized. And the reason she was institutionalized was all financial, because they were paying the health care workers, and it was $15,000 a month. Mind you, when we were in Arizona, her expenses were about $3,000 a month.
So
we're up to $15,000 to isolate her against her will and drug her and all this stuff, right? If you institutionalize her, it's convenient because not only were they paying $15,000 to the healthcare workers, but they had to provide her with food, and make sure that the family was visiting properly and all that. If you institutionalize her, it's only $6,000 a month, and she's got her food there in the facility, and she's locked in a nice little building. So the guardian gets all the benefit, and Kathy gets locked up. And
wow.
She cried every day. I'd find her in the fetal position saying she wants uh-huh. to die. You know, today she's 80 years old almost. She'll be 80 years old in a few days. And she says, I
oh,
don't
wow.
want to die. She's happy.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
and the doctors here.
Go ahead.
Well, the doctors here tested her after we got here, and she was a normal 76-year-old woman. She had MRI. She had the EEG, EKG, whatever they do on your brain there.
Yep.
And she was normal for her age. She didn't have Alzheimer's like the Guardian was stating.
Yeah.
And she was fine. What she had was severe emotional trauma.
Right.
That's what her problem was. So she was locked up,
yep.
and that caused a lot of problems for her, whereas if she would have been left alone, she would have been living a wonderful life.
It's
yeah.
just disgusting.
I wanted
to say about these drugs, they're called handler's drugs, and they're for chemical restraint. Ativan is one of the most god-awful drugs out there. It actually is like a hammer hitting the brain of an elderly person, and it
right
makes
before
them,
we left, Marty, they put her, I'm
yeah.
sorry, on Ativan and Seroquel combination, if you can
wow,
speak to that,
God.
Too.
Seroquel, the recommended dosage per day by the psychiatrist is 400 milligrams. Now, at 25 milligrams, you're looking at sleeping for 10, 12 hours, and you basically are in a fog. At 50 milligrams, you're sleeping 14 to 16 hours. At 100 milligrams, you're basically unconscious for extended periods of time. At 400 milligrams a day, 100 milligrams given four times a day, your brain literally comes to a stop. The synapses in your brain has slowed to such a point that you're actually in a state of, like, hibernation, suspended animation, if you will. This is another deadly drug that damages the frontal cortex of the brain, and that is permanent. It alters the personality, and that portion of the brain controls your emotions, your rational thinking, your inhibitions, your determination of what's right and wrong. And I just got a message here. No, I am not a doctor. I have never said I was a doctor. I don't pretend to be a doctor, but I can read, and they put this stuff out in the public. If I quote it, tough crunchies if you don't like it. Anyway, but these are deadly drugs, and they're considered handler drugs. Ativan. We've seen on Facebook these nurses, which I think is probably one of the most disgusting things I've ever seen, posting comments about the elderly. And if they give me too much trouble, I say to them, well, you must want to ride on the van, Ativan, and how they drug them up and how they become stupid behind it. It makes them, it just renders them dysfunctional. And if you've got dementia already, these drugs are not at all appropriate because they damage the brain further. And that, like I say, that is permanent by the drug company's own admission. And they don't know. They will tell you Merck will put out a big spiel, has on several things. They don't know what these drugs actually do when they get in the brain. They just don't know. What they do know is it calms people down. There is a difference between calming people down and putting them in a semi-coma. This is not calming someone down. This is chemical restraint, and it should be illegal in every state. But when you got buckets of money and you can run in and buy these elected officials off, we know that's not going to happen. The drugging, the immediate jump to drugging is for no other reason than chemical restraint. And it also is a way to begin the hastening of death because mm-hmm. these things will shorten your life in a big hurry. And it just makes me angry.
My mom would be dead today.
Yes, yes.
She would be dead if I hadn't taken her. And her Greek doctors were shocked when they heard what she had been given.
Yeah. And we're almost the only country in the world, Germany I think also does this, that uses these kinds of drugs. There is nothing, they have no testing saying that these are safe. They, like I say, by their own admission, they don't know exactly how they affect the brain. I think they do, but they don't care. Big money. But and they're also quite addictive. So you're creating a compound problem while you damage and injure this person. And if
I
someone
think
had
Seroquel can cause death, can it, in elderly?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And these are, Joanne, this Seroquel, Haldol, Zyprexa, all of these types of drugs, Geodon, Lexapro, are what they're given to our veterans instead of treating them and helping them with PTSD, actually working with them and trying to get them past this stuff. They drug them to death. And what they
can
do
I
is
can I tell you something?
Like,
I'm a veteran, and I can verify that.
Yes. And this is what they do. And they give them multiple medications. They prescribe them in massive, massive doses. Every one of those medications says in the circular not it to be taken within 4 hours of going to bed. And they will tell the veterans, take this right before you go to bed. It'll help you sleep. Sure will, the deep sleep, because many of them die in their sleep because these drugs will stop your heart. And they have medicated to death many of our veterans in an effort to rid themselves of them. At the same time, the drug companies are making out like bandits, you know, because they're buying this stuff by the truckload. It's just, these drugs are not appropriate for it. If you had someone who was violent, and I mean provably violent and uncontrollable, they might be appropriate in that situation to subdue them. Because that's what these, they don't calm them down. These drugs subdue people. And the anger in most people is still there if they're that of that kind of personality, the rage is still, but it just renders them incapable of acting on it. It doesn't make the problem go away. So when you do this to someone, and like I say, if you've got someone who actually does have Alzheimer's, who actually does have dementia, these drugs are not recommended. That's off-label prescribing. They're not to be given with people with these problems because it can make it worse. So why would you recommend this? Why would you do this? And you are knowingly harming your patient, knowingly. What are you getting out of it that you would do this? I don't know. I don't know. When I told you about sending that notice of, you know, to the court and everything, did you send one to the DA?
To the VA?
The district attorney.
The veteran?
Oh,
no, the
district
no,
attorney.
I didn't.
Yeah, okay.
Should I?
I just
was thinking about that, but I didn't do that.
If I was you, I would wait until you get something back from the court because they've accepted this. They've accepted your notice. I would go to the district attorney then because this is clear fraud.
The judge saw the notice because he accepted it, and he had his assistant send us a form. What is the name of the form where you can request to get rid of the guardian? What is that form called? I can't remember. But you know, you look at the form, and you you just kind of get frozen in time because you're like, how do I fill out this form now? And then, how do we go to America to fight the guardianship? Do you know what I mean? I mean
And even if
we fill out the form.
Maybe what you could do is fill out the form and attach a statement to it that because you have been fraudulently charged and have an arrest warrant out for you and that you are fearful that they will kidnap your mother once again, that you're not safe here. And, you know, this would be a clear and present danger to both you and your mother, and your concern being mainly your mother, because if they got a hold of her again, what they did to her the first time is going to be done 10 times worse. The second time, while they make sure she doesn't escape again, if she escapes again, see, that puts that estate up in play. They might get it and they might not. My fear has been, and I'm glad you got these forms filed, because here in Minnesota, we've talked about this before, we have a 4-year statute for death in absentia. meaning we can take everything because we had you declared dead because we said you were missing, whereabouts unknown, and nobody's heard from you, nobody's seen you. Well, see, this notice that you sent dispelled all of that, so they can't do that now. I mean, this would be such blatant fraud at this point that they can't do that. So that's one good thing this accomplished. But I would stay in touch with that court because the fact that they accepted this and sent you a form back, like I say, I would fill it out, and then I would attach a statement, get it notarized that it is you, and tell them that because you're fearful for your well-being and most particularly for your mother, that you cannot risk coming back into the States. I think that in itself is such a sad statement about what we've become. But, you know, what do you think, Cuz?
I want to hear about the getaway. Like, this is, yeah. I am so fascinated by this. Like, how did you, like, obviously you had to get into an airport and fly. How did you do that?
Well, you know what, Cuz? I've been told not to share the details of how we got away.
Oh,
only because,
okay.
Not because I don't want to help other victims, but the guardians tend to use that information to block us, you know, to put up more blocks. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah.
I don't want to give any ideas to the wrong people.
Yeah.
But we were very fortunate because we did leave with nothing. I mean, just really, we had our driver's license. We didn't have our passport or anything like that. But we were fortunate enough to both be Greek citizens, and we were afraid to go to the embassy because, again, you know, the way it's portrayed, the guardian is God, and you know, like,
right.
And he has so much power. And I had this fear of going to the embassy because I thought, oh, the guardian surely called them, and the minute we walk in, you know, we're going to be arrested. So we traveled around the country. Everywhere, here and there, and we were helped by people that knew us, people that didn't know us. It was just pretty amazing. And so finally, we knew we were getting close to getting caught, even though I took a lot of steps. If there's anybody, by the way, that, you know, needs to know that's trying to escape, I would be glad to help them with some ideas. But anyway, we took a lot of steps. We're afraid then at the end because they were following us. They were pursuing us, and they found out different places we were, and we did different things to evade them. And finally, somebody said, you know, if you go to the Greek embassy, you're not on American soil, and at least call them. So I did. I called them. I told them what was happening, and they were able to give us an emergency passport out of the country.
Oh, my
God.
Had I known that 2 years before, she wouldn't have gone, or even 6 years before, she wouldn't have gone through all that, you know. But 2 years before, when she was isolated, had I known that, I could have taken her out and saved her a lot of heartache.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to be a movie. It's going to be a movie.
Yes.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
You just lived a movie. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
You know, and our story is so similar to so many stories, you know, bar the international escape. I mean, a lot of people do escape, and I don't know how many other people have been able to escape internationally. I only know of one other who's still in hiding, right? So we were in hiding for the first couple of years. We were here. It's scary. You don't know what they can do and what they can't.
Yeah.
So,
I know that one gentleman fled to Poland, and we had another... this was someone up in Canada because they have the same system running up there. And I was talking to people up there, and there was a man there that was originally from Ireland, and he fled back to Ireland to escape the guardian there in Canada. And then we've had people in New Zealand also who have fled the country to parts unknown because they, you know, we've tried to make a global coalition out of all of this. And, We hear from people all over the globe, and they've got this, Joanne, they've got this system in place globally, and it's run by an outfit called ICOR. That's capital I-K-O-R, and they sell franchises on how to sell it, set up conservatorships and guardianships, and their byline on it is fast, easy, consistent money. And they are promoted by Yes, they are promoted by the National Guardianship Association, not to be confused with NASGA. This is a outfit. They have chapters in almost every country. They're all protected. That weed event that takes place in Washington, D.C., I was invited to speak there last year for Elder Abuse Awareness Day. When I looked at who the stakeholders were, I hate that word so bad, but who was supporting this, who was promoting this, and here it was the College of Probate Judges, it was the Bar Associations, it was the National Guardianship Association. I mean, it just went down the line of everybody we fight, and I told the lady when she called and asked me why I had refused the invitation, and I said, I cannot be part of this. I cannot stand up. I said, these are all the people we fight, and how did they get to be your sponsors? Why didn't you go to the families who have been harmed? There's many groups out there, hardworking groups out there that have gained national recognition. Why didn't you go to them and have them support you? And she said, well, you know, you have to look past that. No, I don't. No, I don't have to look past that at all. And I wouldn't speak there. I can't be associated with that. That's almost like supporting. No matter what you get up and say, when you look at who's supporting this thing, who's sponsoring it, no. No,
you know, now that you bring that up, let me ask you about these recent bills that they're passing, because I haven't really had time to look over them well, but what I noticed is that the people that are authoring these bills that are passing through the legislature are people that are on the guardianship side.
Yes. Yes. Now, one of the bills they've got up is HF 3391. And, of course, it covers 10,000 statutes. They're changing. But what this damn thing does, where it was not lawful for them, the probate judge had to discard the pre-standing legal agreements. The probate judge had to break into the trust and will. And it was the probate judge. But now in this bill, they are trying to legalize the ability of the guardian to break into that will or that trust, change the beneficiary to someone of their choosing, even if it's themselves. Then it goes on to say that the guardian may, whenever they choose to, isolate, they don't use the word isolation, but house an elderly person in another state. Now, what valid reason could you have for doing that other than to torment that elderly person and torment the family? There is no excuse under any circumstances for any elderly person to be isolated, held away from their family, held away from their friends, from their religious affiliation. You cannot come up with one viable excuse of why this is done. We had last year, Joanne, we had that bill come out, monstrosity of a bill. We have a caveat in our Constitution here that no bill can contain more than one issue. If you even mention another issue, it's off the table. This thing came out, and it covered foster care and wages and housing and elder care and nursing homes and this, that, and something else. And down at the end of it, they changed the patient's Bill of Rights. And it said that isolation was strictly prohibited unless ordered by a conservator or guardian. Who does the isolation? The conservator and the guardian.
Right.
So, and then we have the bills that come out that say you can't, we had another one, I can't remember the number on it, isolation is prohibited and you can't do this and you can't drug without consent. You can't overdrug them unless otherwise ordered by a probate judge, which just wiped the whole rest of the bill out. But these things are always written sounding like they're doing something. They're doing something, you know, to protect the elderly. Well, when are we going to see some legislation to protect the elderly from these predators? When
and
are we going to see that?
These bills?
The near as we can tell, and I tried to backtrack and find out, but it appears that our favorite fiduciary corporation, who is running in three states, North Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and has out this big fluffy website give you the warm fuzzies reading it. I'm telling you it will. Is so entrenched in our legislature. It's like an open door. They can get anything they want. That's what happens when you have tons of money that isn't yours that you can spread around and you can buy that support from these people. These bills make me so angry. I can't stand it because it is obvious they were not written by the legislator. The one thing I have found out in dealing with legislators, 99% of the time, they couldn't tell you what that bill says. They had no hand in writing it. They usually take it to a bill writer who is usually a member of the Bar Association who's going to make sure the bar always has the advantage and always has an ability to make money from whatever is going on. I see this all the time, but when you question them directly about the bill, which I have done numerous times over the last several months, several of these representatives and state senators, what you find is they don't know what that bill says. Then why are you supporting? Why did you put your name on it? Well, you know, it's to protect the elderly. And while I don't have time to go through everything, you know, we're doing everything we can. I said, to what? Get rid of them? Because that's the way this thing reads.
Are any of the national groups, I'm sorry, are any of the national groups, family groups against guardianship involved in writing, or they're not allowed?
Well, NASCA has done a lot of work and gotten bills passed in several states.
Right.
That have.
But Go ahead. I'm wondering if they're purposely kind of pushed out. You know, they can come in and give
their
input, but I wonder if their input is taken into consideration actually.
Yeah.
Because if it were, these bills wouldn't read the way they do.
No, they wouldn't. And wouldn't you be humiliated as a representative or a senator to get called out by one of your constituents and you have to admit you never read the bill? You have to admit you put your name on it as an author or a sponsor and you don't know what it says. And the only reason you would do that is to hide who actually authored that bill.
Mm-hmm.
Who was actually behind that bill. When I read through these, what I'm seeing is they are systematically codifying into law the illegal actions of these predators. For instance, as I mentioned, the ability to break into trusts and wills. These are supposed to be sacrosanct. You're not supposed to be able to touch those. And yet we've watched these probate examiners year after year, hundreds if not thousands of times a year, discard freestanding legal agreements that I think if they can be discarded, then the attorney who sold that plan to you should be guilty of fraud. Because they misrepresented themselves to you in two ways. Number one, that they were an expert, and number two, that this was a way to protect yourself. Neither thing is obviously true, so that was fraud. You should be able to go back on that attorney and get all the money back that you spent, maybe some damages. Just like being cited out for contempt of court in probate. That examiner has no authority. None, zippo, nada, to put you in jail. They can't do it. What they do, if they say, you know, I'm citing you for contempt, that order is sent over to a state law judge who signs it and sends it back. But that probate examiner does not have that authority to have you arrested for anything, much less contempt. But people don't know, and when we have probate examiners telling people, I have cases here. You mentioned the Constitution one more time, I'll put you in jail. In this court, you have no rights. The law is what I say it is. No, it isn't. And this isn't a court of law.
I'd love to have my cell phone recording that. Wow. Is that why we're not allowed to record? And I said I'd love to have my cell phone recording. Well, something like that was said, that would go viral.
Yes. Well, we have it in transcripts from several years ago. But see, now they have stopped audio taping. They won't do that anymore. And then they didn't have a stenographer in there, so they quit keeping transcripts. And then they said, oh, well, you can, if you want a transcript, then you can bring in your own stenographer. Well, people were doing that, so they outlawed that. Now you can't do that anymore. And it, so there, you know, and this even, what I saw here in Minnesota, we've got a statute now that even on felony criminal cases, there will be no videotape. Why? What are you hiding? What are you hiding?
Right.
But see, and then what we're doing with the elderly, and most of the time they're not allowed to even attend their own hearing, even though the law says they have every right to. But if it's, if you force the issue, these drugs you talked about, Joanne, are administered so that when they're rolled in there in a chair, because there's no way they're going to let them walk in under their own steam, they'll drug them to the point they don't know what planet they're on, and they'll say, see, I told you, they're incapacitated. And remember, cause it used to be incompetent. Oh, they were incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
And we highlighted that incompetent meant that certain tests had been applied and this determination was made, and they had dementia, and maybe they had Alzheimer's, and you had medical tests and experts. But they changed that word to incapacitated, which is means nothing and everything. It, like mm-hmm. I've said before, you bumped your head, you stubbed your toe, you're incapacitated. And so they stand up again in court, and they levy all these charges. And, you know, too many times, like I said, these predators could not identify the targeted victim if they were in a one-person lineup. They couldn't identify because they'd beaten them.
Yeah, no.
You know, they've never seen them. Supposedly they found them living in squalor, covered in urine and feces, starving to death. They have never seen that individual. Where did you get that information? And then there's silence. And
you know, what happened to my mother, she was never in court. She wasn't allowed to go to court. When they went for the emergency guardianship, that was the first day that guardian ever met my mother, and they did an emergency guardianship on her, and then he came over and met her. And then for the permanent guardianship, she wasn't allowed to go because what the guardian did, and they know this, they're smart, you know, they know how to run their system. He brought another guardian with him, and during the court was at 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, my mother was forcibly taken by the other guardian to a follow-up appointment with the same doctor that diagnosed her with severe dementia. So they purposely kept her out of the court when she was being guardianized, and all her rights were being taken away. And then a couple times while she was in the institution, we went to court. The guardian stopped by the facility, made sure she was fully drugged before the court. So even if we brought her, she couldn't function in court. And then finally, before we left, we had a court hearing trying to get her out of the facility, and she was asked to testify, and the judge said she can't testify because she's incapacitated. I made her incapacitated. She doesn't have a right. So she couldn't defend herself. And then in 2017, after we were here in Greece, there was a court hearing that was held, and again, my mom tried to hire a private attorney, and the judge refused. The private attorney went to the court and said, you know, Catherine Bogalis, I'm her attorney. I'd like to represent her. And the judge said, well, she'd have to be here. I'd have to see her to see if she's, you know, got the capacity to hire you and to be represented. But he never wanted to see her before when he took away all her rights. Isn't that interesting? So he did not allow this attorney, and he said, if you don't tell me where Catherine Bogalis is, you can't be her attorney, and I have to see her personally. So he didn't allow that attorney to represent my mom. And that day, the reason they had the court hearing that day is because the guardian didn't pass his audit. But the judge never once asked, where is Catherine Bogalis? Does she have her, you know, is she taken care of? Does she have income? Nothing. Instead, he gave the guardian the authority to just overlook all the audit and keep his $126,000 income for that year. And he gave him the authority to take over another trust that she had in Arizona and remove me from her trustee. Yes. So, and nobody asked, how's Kathy? Where is she? Does she need help? The ward? Nothing. It was all about the money. And they appointed the judge appointed a court-appointed attorney that had a conflict of interest, and the judge very well knew that, that he had a conflict of interest. And mom's attorney, who was sitting through that court process, said that there was only a court-appointed attorney for guardianship. There was no court-appointed attorney for the conservatorship part of the hearing process. So they basically took the rest of whatever she had and didn't take care of her at all.
Wow.
And then later they sold her house, and underlined in the paperwork submitted to the court, it said, we have to sell her house to provide for the care of the ward. And this is while we were missing, and he said that he didn't know where she was. And I will tell you that he knows exactly where she is, because when he first got hired, he spent $3,000 on an international Greek-American attorney to find out what my mom has here in Greece that he could take. So he knows exactly,
oh my God,
where his ward is. Yes, he does.
Yeah. That is
he knows
so
what
sick.
She has.
I can't
oh,
stand it.
So
I
disgusting.
Wanted to let you know, we have a very fair number, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, area code 202. That's D.C. Access denied. They're listening. Don't just sit
good.
There
I
and
hope
lurk
they are, and I hope they. I hope that they actually will do something about it and not,
yeah,
you know, be pushed back or afraid. Because, you know, to get somebody to help you, there has to be something in it for them. They're not going to help unless they look good, basically.
Yeah.
Isn't that the truth? That's the truth.
Yes. Yes.
You know, a
yeah.
legislator isn't going to help you and put himself on the line when he's got pressure from the guardian and whoever else is involved,
yeah,
in this racket. And we know a lot of the people that are involved in this racket.
Yeah.
So they're going to worry more about their career. Even attorneys won't help you. Why? Because
no,
they're going to be disbarred. Their reputation is going to be ruined if they don't play this racketeer game.
Right.
Right?
That's the whole thing, too. That judge, what was his name? Do you remember?
Which one? My mother's?
That wouldn't hear her case because she wasn't there and he had to see her. Was it the same judge
established
our... Go ahead.
It was Judge Gary Paglicetti. And there's really nothing you can do. We've complained to so many agencies, even to that, what is it called, the judicial board that investigates,
yes,
the judges. Yeah, they
yes,
won't do anything either.
And oh, no.
I know we're
that,
not
and
the only
the
ones.
You, no, you're not. And that's what really gets me is you don't have anywhere to go. And I keep telling people, don't waste your time filing complaints with judicial oversight or bar oversight boards, because it's going to go nowhere. They're all a bunch of crooks for the most part. There might be one or two that aren't. But what they do, this is a protection racket running. And they con you into filing a complaint with them, okay? And that complaint, of course, they never find anything wrong. And the reason they don't find anything wrong is because they've probably done the same thing themselves. And if they got away with it, you can too. So it's just... this is how this runs. And, you know, what I don't understand is why we have tolerated it. Instead of filing a complaint that's going to go nowhere, you file a claim against them for damages. And the other thing is a certificate and notice of liability, personal liability. Now, what they do is they claim immunity. Oh, we have immunity. No, actually, you don't. And you have immunity only so long as you stay within the confines of the law. But in probate, you are not dealing with law. As I said, you're dealing with statute. So you have, and you aren't a real judge. Judge is a particular word that is conducive to the law. And they erroneously call these hearing examiners, these administrative executives, judges. No, they are not. They are working for the same agencies and the state. Okay? And they are not judges of the law. They don't deal with law. So any immunity they think they've got is out the door. But any immunity that would be implied is implied only as long as they stay within the confines of the law. And once they step outside of that, they lose that immunity. And furthermore, you cannot sue the office. The agency can't be held responsible, but the individual can. And you can file against them personally, but you give them a notice of individual liability saying, if you violate my rights, if you violate the Constitution, you know, if you misinterpret laws, if you intentionally deprive me of my rights, I'm holding you personally liable. And have them sign that before they hand down any judgments. And if they won't sign it, just say, then you can't hold this session. Because when you go into a tribunal, when you walk through that door, you are not protected by the Constitution. And you are there under coercion and duress. And that's not supposed to happen. And we haven't got but maybe a handful of attorneys across the country, most of them in the middle of getting sanctioned or disbarred, who will stand up and say, this is wrong, you can't do this. You're violating people's rights. When they do Lisa, of course, out in Boston is a big example. They want to disbar her. They want to get rid of her. We've had other attorneys around the country, the same thing. If they actually try to represent their client and prevent any of this from happening, they get rid of them. That whole bar association will turn on them like a pack of pit vipers. They'll destroy their reputation. They'll plant phony stories about them. They'll do everything they can to disrupt their practice, their business, with the ultimate aim of totally shutting them up. Because you can't have somebody step outside the circle of thieves. And most attorneys these days, that's really all they are, is a thief with a bogus license. There again, when somebody says, I have a bar card, all that means is you belong to a union and you pay dues. That isn't a license. Only the state can issue a license. The Bar Association cannot. They can make you join their union. And that's another thing. When people scream about these unions, the biggest freaking and most powerful union in the country is the Bar Association. Why don't you ever talk about them?
You know, can I say, too, that a lot of these Minnesota lawyers I can speak about that used to be on the side of the families now are part of the racket, and they get sucked in. And I'm talking about lawyers that were adamantly against what the guardians were doing, and all of a sudden, you know, but it's their bread and butter. You either join the club and be safe, or you go against the club and, you know,
and
risk losing your career. Right.
Yes, and they do.
Sounds kind of like mafia,
career.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, kind of does. But see the difference.
You know,
I grew up in an Italian neighborhood, and I mean hardcore Italian. Many of the people there that, like, I went to school with, their parents were first generation from Italy. The thing about the mafia is they'll tell you up front what they're going to do to you if you don't play right. There's no messing around. They'll tell you up front what they're going to do. So in that sense, I believe they have more integrity than most members of these bar associations. Because they'll lie to your face, con you out of your money, screw you over in court, and laugh all the way to the bank, and come back and try to hit you again. It is no longer the honorable career that it used to be. You know, we used to hold attorneys in high esteem. Anymore, they are the disregard for these people is so massive. And the worse it gets, the harder they dig in, and the more they try to take control of. So, you know, that's a whole thing there. Cause, what do you got?
You know, my
going?
Dad
Anything?
Said that. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Joanne.
Well, my dad said that way back when I was going to go to law school, and I got accepted. I think it was 2005. And my dad said to me, "What do you want to go there for? Now attorneys are a dime a dozen. You're going to spend all this money for law school and you won't get a job." And but it's true. But, you know, he knew that way back then. Can I just add one more thing that I just thought was kind of an interesting point? I should have went to law school because then I could really go after these people, right? Because I know what I'm talking about. Because now it's just – but anyway, so I was listening to the news and they were talking about in America there's 320 million people in America. Mm-hmm. And so – so then I thought, well, no wonder why they keep ignoring us, because there's 1.5 million wards, you know, times an average of 10, maybe 5 or 10 people that are affected also that are connected to the ward by this system, right? But 1.5 is a drop in the bucket. So obviously all these people that are suffering are not significant to the government because it's only 1.5. That's not a big voting base, is it?
Right.
Plus, Plus, they get the votes of the 1.5 because the votes go to the guardians, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, well, I mean, in a pool of 320 million, we can be ignored. That's what they're doing.
Yes, and then you look at the value of the estates, it's approaching $10 billion a year by low estimate that is being stolen from the victim and their heirs. So you're stealing generational wealth and you know, things that rightfully should go to the heirs. And you have this interloper coming in there who has no good intentions, whose only interest is the value of that estate and how to take it. And you've got the full cooperation of these probate tribunals. This is all such a set-up deal. It's absolutely disgusting. Go ahead.
Can I tell you what the guardian told my brother? Because my brother comes every year, and he gives him the guardian evidence every year where my mom is, and that, you know, she sends her pictures, and that he visits her, and she's alive and well. And I forgot my point now. What were we discussing?
We're talking about your friend's visiting and.
Right. So my brother, every year he would write to the guardian and he would say, we'd like you to give up your guardianship, you know, resign from guardianship because you don't have a person to guardianize, you know, if you stay conservator. And what the guardian did, the first year he ignored him completely because this is what the guardians do, they ignore family members. The second year, my brother called and called, and finally he got to speak to the guardian. And what the guardian told him is, even though he has evidence where my mom is, he said, well, I'm not going to give up the guardianship, and the judge won't support that either. So what I'm going to do is I'll only charge the estate $50 a year to do the well-being report.
Oh,
so that's what he told my brother. Yeah.
That was real white of him.
Right?
Yeah,
as he's looking at pictures of my mother in Greece here.
Yeah.
Evidence.
And like I say, this individual is well known in government. Money talks. Money talks. And his wealth, or the corporation's wealth, and I'm assuming his own personal, increases incrementally every year as they target and capture more individuals begin the theft of these estates. And nobody can look at any of this. There is not one case we have ever looked at where what the guardian did was merited by what was actually the case. They have gone so far out, they've been allowed to run without any control whatsoever. They have been allowed to do whatever they want. But, you know, I hate to bring up this virus thing, and I don't want to get off on that. But, you know, I've said for years, this is a culling. And they use hospice. We do the shows on hospice. They kill a couple hundred thousand of people a year prematurely in hospice. They diagnose them with fake illnesses they don't have. And we've gotten this last year six people out of hospice that never had a terminal illness, but they were in the process of killing them slowly. And this is what hospice is. It has become the Grim Reaper. It just makes me sick. But apparently this system wasn't working fast enough. And you also had medical kidnap. That was, you know, if you ask for a second opinion now, they immediately guardianize you because you, for some reason, can't have a second opinion, and you must be out of your mind for asking for one. And we've seen this happen a lot to children who are worth a fortune in the medical system. But we see it happen to elderly, too. You don't dare ask for a public, for a second opinion. The state of Virginia is floating a bill that would take away your right to make any decisions medically if you're in the hospital. These people are so desperate to get total control, and you have to watch these things to figure out what's going on. But the whole thing in all of this is we are witnessing a global culling. Everybody, I would say 90% from everything I've read, that are succumbing to this so-called virus are elderly people. And people who are chronically ill or have severe underlying health conditions, we are watching a culling of the vulnerable and the weak. And they're calling it this virus. We've caught Health and Human Services and the CDC coming out and saying you put it down as COVID even if you didn't test, even if you don't know for sure or you only suspect, you write it off as COVID, and they've inflated these statistics. Then we see the New York and a couple other states, the governors ordered the nursing homes to take COVID patients. Where's the other place people are dying at an accelerated rate? Nursing homes. Supposedly this virus swept through there and took out 50, 60 people. Why would you send people you claim are infected with this deadly virus into that environment with people who are already vulnerable? And there can be only one conclusion, because you want rid of all of them. And it's doing the job. It's the same thing is happening at the VA. 70 of our veterans at that home in Massachusetts dead. You're watching a culling. And as you
think of the government, how much they're saving. I mean, as you're talking about,
exactly.
Well, Medicare, Social Security, well, they're saving a lot of money.
Yeah.
Veterans
well,
with benefits,
and
yeah.
The other thing it does, I don't know if you know or not, but if you get a diagnosis of COVID, your insurance company doesn't have to pay. Now, tell me why that is. But they don't have to pay. They do not cover COVID. And so they don't have to pay. So everybody's making money, saving money. And we're taking out, I think the plan was for at least $1 million, $1.5 million to die. It didn't go quite the way they planned, and I think that's why they have started putting sick people in to nursing homes. Where the deaths are being recorded is nursing homes, hospitals, prisons, jails, residential homes, VA homes, where people are cloistered, sequestered in groups, and they're already weak and vulnerable, and somehow, I just don't know how this virus gets in there and boom, kills them all. But you're exactly right.
Well, I want to say, if the virus doesn't kill them, the wards that are in these institutions and in these nursing homes and assisted living facilities, they're not well taken care of.
No.
Usually, like where my mom was, there was only two staff for 12 people, and at night there was only one staff with an unlocked door to the facility. You know, unlocked till 10 o'clock. I mean, I would walk in and think, my God, my mom could, anybody could walk in here and hurt her, and they would never know because
yeah.
they could never find the staff, yeah. right? But what happens
yeah.
is they end up getting dehydrated. They get urinary
mm-hmm.
tract infections. They end up in the hospital. And, you know, I know of a couple cases where they ended up in the hospital several times, and then all of a sudden they're dead when they didn't have any reason to be dead.
Right.
And you just wonder, you know, were they really supposed to die that day? Or
wow.
are they being murdered?
Hospice, you know, stops food and hydration. And I kept wondering how they got away with that. How can you, and they'll do it in the hospital also.
Well,
how
and they could so easily put stuff in IVs too. I mean, you
well,
know, how do we know?
We
how do we know?
We have Dr. Orient on. And I brought this up, you know, how can you withhold food and water from anyone? That's a human right. She said, no. Under Obamacare, she said, food and water were changed from human right and necessity to medical treatment. So when they call for futility of care, all medical treatment has stopped. It stopped immediately. Now it's palliative care, she said, which is stealth euthanasia. They're in the process of killing them outright. And you know, that this goes on in this country of all places. This sounds like stuff you'd hear in some third world country, except they don't have any
yeah.
property, so why would you? But
you think it can't happen there, but it's happening. It's one
yeah.
step at a time. They're completely taking over our lives and our choices
yes.
and our freedoms.
But they are getting rid of as many of the elderly and the chronically ill that's costing the system money the way they see it, never mind we contributed to all of this as an insurance
mm-hmm.
policy to support this system, and they took the money and used it for all kinds of other stuff like starting wars of aggression and so on. And, you know, they've used it for anything and everything. They've used it like a big slush fund. And now that they're talking about it, well, it could go broke by this year or that year. We'll pay it back. They never intended to. Don't have any way to pay it back, even if they did, without coming back to the same people they robbed and hitting them again for more taxes. So what's the next best thing? if you cut benefits, the whole public's going to rise up. So the next best thing is get rid of the claimants. And that's what you're
right.
watching happening. Exactly what you're watching happening. And I think it's disgusting. Cause, you're awful quiet. Say something.
Oh, I'm just listening and thinking about, you know, we talked about my brother. He's still in the hospital. And it went through his whole assisted living. He's in a special needs assisted living. And all but two employees got it. Went wiped through.
Oh, wow.
No one has passed away. And
good.
That's a miracle. But the prayers have been amazing. The first night that he went in, we thought he, you know, and that was the night that we did the show. We didn't think he was going to make it until the next morning. And I think all the prayers really made a difference. And he's still in the hospital, but he's doing well. So thank, tell
wow,
him.
Good.
Thank
I
you.
Didn't,
but yeah.
I didn't get a
yeah,
chance
I,
to listen to that show. I'm sorry to hear that. I didn't know that.
Oh, thank you, Joanne. Yeah, it was quite a shock. Marty and I had a different show planned, and we had like planned it all in the morning, and then I had found out around 11 o'clock, and I'm calling her crying, and I'm like, we did a really nice tribute to him and to everybody with special needs, and especially like if you're a sibling of someone with special needs. And I thought
mm-hmm.
I thought it was a well-received show, and I really enjoyed doing it.
Yes.
So,
yes.
But I don't know, do I get to – and then we talked about my commercial. Have you seen the
yes.
commercial, Joanne? Isn't that awesome?
No.
So I'm so, oh, it's the first NASCA commercial in the world.
Oh, really? I have to
yeah.
I have
yeah.
to see that.
Yes.
Yes.
Where do I
–
where
go,
can I see that? Where can you see it?
Go to NASCA, Wisconsin, and I did like a debut Facebook Live there, and then I have the commercial. The link is there, and it's on YouTube. I think if you, I don't know what you would Google on YouTube. So if you go to NASCA, Wisconsin, so we have a special NASCA, Wisconsin page.
Okay.
Everything will be there, and then it was shared on the main NASCA page, but I think so many other things get shared, so it could be way down on the feed. But NASCA, Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
is still up at the top of the feed.
Oh,
so there's
wow.
that. Yeah, go. Yeah, and then that was just an excitement to talk about. And that was the commercial in the beginning of the show. So we got to
oh,
talk
nice.
About that. Well, and now
yes.
there's another commercial in the brewing.
Good.
Marty. So
what?
This is exciting news. Marty kept a secret from me. Okay,
oh.
I'm going to try not to cry because this is like such exciting stuff. So it's like super busy. It's Mother's Day weekend, and I'm a bakery, and I had to tell my staff I'm going to go home and take a nap because I had to do a phone call. This is today. So I'm in like, oh. So anyways, there's some – okay, I don't know how all this like president election stuff works. I'm sure there's like all these different groups. Like what's a PAC? Like you see that on the commercials paid for this PAC or that PAC. So I don't know who – like all the layers of the commercials. So anyway, I get this call because they wanted to talk to me because they're having a meeting with Miss Marty in D.C.
And
I know. And so I was so excited. You kept such a big secret from me. But anyway, they talked to me. They did a little interview. Don't know if they'll use my information that I gave them. But what they're doing is it's like they're going to do like a commercial for like the Trump election, like for the reelection.
Mm-hmm.
So one of his taglines was drain the swamp. If you guys remember from like 4 years ago, drain the swamp. And what they had said to me was, and I'm going to get all the information over to them. I haven't been able to do it yet because we just talked. But what they said to me was, you know, give me some information on the swamp. And as I was talking to them, I said, I would love for you to showcase the swamp of the at-holes because in Pennsylvania, a third of the population in Pennsylvania are elderly. And I think it would be a really great campaign for someone running for the president of the United States, and you're going to drain the swamp to really showcase and highlight the swamp. And then it sounds like, and I had heard this before, like Trump is putting a lot of his own judges like all over the country. And so
yeah.
if he can showcase like slimy judges, it can like give him more power to put judges out there.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
Which, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, what is that? Is that called like a media whore? Like, I'll do whatever
yeah.
you want. Just just I want to showcase the at-holes. I am yours. I am yours. And so I don't know. So, Marty, I hear that there is a meeting that you're going out to D.C. to meet with some campaign people or some kind of people. I don't know all the layers of Trump. So would you like to explain yourself from keeping a secret?
No. I was trying to keep that quiet. Thank you.
I was so excited when I got the call.
Yeah, but I was trying to keep that under wraps for fear that the glory hogs would come stampeding in. And you know what happens then? Everything goes off the rails. Mm-hmm. And But, yeah, there is a meeting scheduled. I don't know if I'm going to be able to attend or not because of the virus. They don't know at this point, you know, when we're going to be able to do this. But hopefully things will loosen up by the 1st of June, and we should be able to set something firm then. And but, my goodness, I got to talk to you about I've got a secret.
Well, yeah, but I think that you might have given my phone number out. So anyway, I was super excited, but I also am like, I have learned to, whenever like these stories, like I've had different reporters that I've talked to and different TV shows that you talk to, and then nothing comes of it. But so I've learned to not be like, oh my gosh, this is the thing.
Don't get
it. They're going to do a commercial.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to do a commercial. Yeah. Trump's going to drain the swamp, and he's going to showcase the at-holes. You know, that would be an awesome commercial. But, you know, and you said some 202 people are listening, like, oh, my gosh, they could, like, do it on Joanne's judge. Like, there's judge, there's a swamp that needs to be drained. So I don't know if this will go anywhere, but I was super excited to hear that there's looking into it. And, you know, when it's politics, you know, if I need to, I will be used by any. I am out for use me. Whoever would like to use me, I will share that story.
Right.
I am yours.
You know, can I bring something else up while we're talking about that?
Sure.
Kind of on the other end. There's really not a lot of information to present, like, you know, about guardianship. Let's say it's all scattered. Right? The whole system is scattered. There's no central body that keeps track of what's happening. And so I just wanted to, can I talk a little bit about the survey?
Yeah.
Sure.
Marty? There are some advocates that have come up with this wonderful survey, and it's just at its start, but basically any person from any state can take this survey, and then they're going to end up dividing it by state so each state can keep their own tally but what the survey does is it collects data from family members and wards if they can fill out the survey so we can see the patterns that are happening, because right now everybody's complaining, right? And there's some central bodies, but there's really no statistics, right?
Yeah,
that they have.
Right.
So anyway, can I give the website where this survey is?
Sure.
Am I allowed to do that? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, it's http :// www.probatewatch.org. So it's probatewatch.org.
And you can also find it on the NASCA page also. There's a link to it on NASCA's page.
Okay, they did put it on there. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So I just want to put that out there, because the more people that take it, the more information you know, we can gather to present to Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
and I've taken it myself, and it has...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it just has some really relevant questions and facts that they're trying to put together.
Yes.
For legislation and to make changes to show that changes really do need to be made.
Yes. Well, you know, and in all of this, too, one of the most startling things, I think, was I kept noting over the years that if you could get a transcript, that the judge would take away everybody's rights. I mean, they couldn't breathe without permission of the probate court and the guardian, except the right to vote. Now, initially, I thought that was so that they couldn't get nailed under the Civil Rights Act. But what it turns out is, once you're guardianized, that right to vote, they take your name, your address, and they vote for you. If they don't personally vote for you, they collect your name, your address, and all pertinent information, and they bundle that with everybody they can find, dead or alive. And they sell that. These bundlers sell it to attorneys who then sell it to the political parties, and both of them buy them. And these are, you know, you see things about dead people voting. This is how it happens. This is directly a result of this probate system. And even after the person has died, they are still selling their right to vote. And they are still selling their information. And I think it was, where was it at? I want to say Florida, where they caught them filling out ballots on people who were known to be deceased. These were done through these bundlers and these attorneys, and like I say, both political parties. I'm a political atheist. I don't believe none of them. And, but they buy them, and they'll buy thousands at a time. And so you end up with, you know, 200,000 or 300,000 in an election who voted who are dead. This goes on every year, and it's well known to everyone that it does. Everybody participates. So it's just who's got the money to buy the vote. And but why would you strip someone, excuse me, of every right that they have, claiming they are too incompetent, too incapacitated to manage their own life, but you can go vote? Really? Really?
Oh, Marty, that's why the guardian wants the mail. So then they send away for a, what are those ballots called? The
absentee.
The paper ballot. Yeah, the absentee.
Yeah.
Then they write for an absentee ballot for their ward, but the mail comes to their house. Ah,
yes.
It all makes sense.
Or they bundle them, they bundle that up. See, and they might have, let's say, like with this particular corporation we're talking about, they might have 100 people that who have died, another 200 people that are under current guardianship, and they take all of those identities and sell that. They bundle it up and sell it. And then whoever
buys it. Can I tell you something else that they do?
Sure.
That I've discovered. when they have a ward, oftentimes, from what I've discovered, the ward's Social Security number has a second name attached. The judge's Social Security number has a second name attached. The guardians often have multiple Social Security numbers, dates of birth, that kind of thing. But that doesn't show up at the Social Security office. And so what are they using it for? Are they double billing? And, you know, this particular organization we're discussing has some other fraudulent things happening and possibly multi-state fraud type of things. And so you wonder, because they also own other businesses, including what is it called, a foreign investment businesses. So you will start to wonder what's going on.
Right.
Why are their second names attached to the wards? Are they, where's this money going? I don't know. What's the Social Security number being used for?
Sounds like a shell personality that they've set
up. Well, and the names are that are attached are the same sex, the same age as the person that has the Social Security number. So what's happening?
I noticed this corporation also, and I find it's true in other corporations who make their living preying on other people. They list all the people they have preyed on as associates.
Yes.
They don't list them as clients. They don't list them as victims of guardianship. They are associates. Doesn't that sound nice?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We associated
and then
with them so we could steal their estate. Yes, go ahead.
Right. And the other thing, a lot of guardians have their own facilities as well, like nursing homes, assisted living, which is a conflict of interest.
Yep.
Isn't it? I mean, and a lot of them have their own... Yes, and a lot of them have their own accounting firms, and they have all kinds of little side businesses going on that are attached to
everybody,
what they're doing.
Everybody gets a piece of the pie. I don't know. We're down to about the last 5 minutes. Cause you haven't hardly said anything. You need to speak up and say something, girl.
Oh my goodness! But I have to tell you, I'm kind of tired. We do these football K's, and I mean, I think we're gonna hit like 200 in less than a week, and we have to make them and deliver them. And it's just myself and one other gal have been doing it all week long. And I'm still here at the bakery, and when we're done, I still have some work to do. But I've just been so like fascinated with your story, Joanne, and I am like, wow, that you had to go to the embassy and like escape the United States, escape the country that everyone's trying to sneak into. Wow.
Well, and the country won't help. The country won't help their own citizens. They're trying to keep people that aren't citizens out, you know. And then they won't help their own citizens who are running from the borders. It's amazing.
Yes.
Wow. It's unreal.
Yeah.
Well, they have all of this stuff associated with this faked up virus, and it is a fake pandemic. There is no pandemic to it. We lose more people every year from the flu than have been lost in this, but it's who this is focused on that is a concern. And while you're being bulldozed with this fake virus. And did you see the DOD report that came out that said that this people who test positive have gotten the flu vaccine? It's directly tied to the flu vaccine. This particular virus that causes this horrendous viral pneumonia is in the flu vaccine. They planned this. Now the DOD came out with this report. They planned this. And then, you know, and they always focus on the elderly, get your flu shot, get your flu shot. You know, you may still get the flu, but it might help. Well, if I can still get it, what's the point of getting the shot? You know, and plus God knows what else is in there. And, but this is the other thing. And to understand that they are prohibited from collecting any information regarding flu vaccination with these deaths. Now, everybody in that nursing home had to get a flu shot. What does that tell you? What does that tell you? And everybody in the VA has had to have flu shots. Everybody in jail, everybody in prison has had to have flu shots. Don't get that damn vaccine. I'm telling you, don't do it.
Another step
We've
on social
got...
control.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And, but it's just, like I say, we are watching a global culling. And where most countries have backed off of this, we're going full bore. And it looks to me like they're trying to get as many people infected, if they in fact even have it, because they said even Italy came out and admitted that at least 90% of the people they determined died of COVID actually died of underlying health conditions that had nothing to do with COVID. And
you know, Greece is one of the countries that didn't get many cases at all, but they, because of their economic crisis, they isolated people right away, you know, staying
yeah.
home. And so, because they couldn't afford another crisis, but
yeah.
who knows if,
well,
I don't know how long the U.S. Yeah. waited, but maybe they waited too long, I don't know.
They did, the isolation does not work. You do not quarantine healthy people, you quarantine the sick.
The sick,
and you do
yeah.
not lock down your economy and destroy the country because some people are susceptible and some aren't. You don't do this. This is suicide, economic suicide, which is exactly what was planned. They are taking us apart, and they warned us that when this is over, what we think is normal will never return. We have been overthrown, and you're not going to realize how badly this is done. We've got 90 seconds left here. Joanne, I want to thank you for coming on and for staying up so late to talk with us.
Thank you.
Thank you both, and thank you for everybody that tuned in to listen.
Yeah,
we've had a full house. We had a full house. So thanks, everybody, for taking the time to listen to the show. We will be back hopefully next week if Kaz hasn't baked herself to sleep.
And happy Mother's Day to everyone.
Yes,
thank you. You
happy
too.
Mother's Day.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Tell your mama I said hi, Joanne. And,
I will.
We'll
thank
be talking
you so much.
We'll be talking to everybody soon. Have a good evening, and thanks for tuning in. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.